Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett, and I'm excited to launch a new podcast about Mormon history. You may wonder why I picked the name Gospel Tangents. Back in college, a couple of friends were wondering if Adam and Eve had a belly button. Kind of an interesting conversation. They said, yeah, it's not exactly what you're going to be talking about in Sunday school, more of what you'll talk about in the hall, kind of a Gospel Tangents class. The name stuck with me, and that's where I got it. Anyway, I'm excited to interview Margaret Young. She's a professor of English and Literature at BYU and has written 8 books, 3 of which are on Black Mormon pioneers. So she's kind of an expert on the topic. I hope this is the first of many conversations with authors and historians as we discuss Mormon history. Let's listen in on my conversation with Margaret. Welcome here. This is my first Gospel Tangents podcast. Got Margaret Young here today. Margaret's a wonderful... I know you teach English, but I call you a historian, especially of Black history.
The last thing I wrote for the church history department, their series Women of Faith, I told them that I had a particular document in its original. And they said, so you have the holograph? And I said, no, it's the original. And they said, well, that's what we call it. And I said, okay, you've just found me out. I'm actually not a historian. I don't know the terms. But I have been since 1998. Deeply involved in history of Blacks in the West.
Well, that's wonderful. So with February coming up, February is Black History Month, I thought it would be wonderful to talk to you a little bit about Mormon Black pioneers. And the one thing that I think gets a lot of short shrift is Jane Manning James. You know, a lot of times, one of my big interests has always been the priesthood ban. And, you know, we talk about the men and how it affected the men. But I think Jane Manning James, you know, I know she wrote a letter, which we will talk about.
She wrote multiple letters asking for temple blessings to every church leader who she knew.
And was denied. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go here. But I think that really one of the big blind spots in Black history is, you know, the women. What happened with the women? And so... so that's what I'd like to talk to you a little bit about today. So,
and we can do Jane, and she's not the only one. There are other women. Jane is predominant in many ways because she remained in Salt Lake City. She remained LDS. But there are Black women who came on the Pioneer Trek who had significance in United States history. Not in Utah.
Yes, there's
Biddy Smith Mason.
Yes, so we'll save another episode.
Right, so we can just focus on Jane now.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Jane James, or I guess she grew up Jane Manning. Is that correct?
Right.
Manning is her maiden name.
Jane Elizabeth Manning.
So, can you talk a little bit about, you know, what are the first stories that you know? Was she free slave or was
she free
or slave?
Connecticut had been emancipated. Her mother, there was gradual emancipation in Connecticut. Her mother, whose slave name was Phyllis and whose free name was Eliza, was raised a slave, but she, because of gradual emancipation, was also free by the time of the trek.
Okay. Do you know approximately what year that Jane was born?
1822.
So she was born free. Do you know what church she grew up in?
And Presbyterian. And the Presbyterians, in fact, there's a page where they talk about pushing her outside because she keeps going to hear the Mormons, and the pastor does not like that. Jane had been raped by a minister who, this was in Wilton, Connecticut. So in the first book, I kind of identify him. There's pretty good evidence of who it probably was. So she had a son, Sylvester, when she first came into Nauvoo. And Sylvester was there with them on the trek. So that part is pretty well known. The stories, when they were first being told, tended to focus on her remarkable journey. She joined the church in Wilton, Connecticut, and her whole family had joined the church, meaning her siblings. And her mother and her stepfather also had joined the church, and we think the stepfather probably took a train, but all of the other Mannings went to Buffalo, New York, with the intent of taking a ship to Nauvoo. They got all of their baggage on the ship, and then were told, oh, you can't go unless you pay up front. Well, they didn't have any money, and of course, this went back to their race. So they left that boat and started walking. And she says, we walked at a distance of over 800 miles. We walked until the soles of our shoes wore out and you could see the whole print of blood on the ground. We knelt and prayed. We asked God, the Eternal Father, to heal our feet. And our prayers were answered and our feet were healed forthwith. We went on our way singing, praising God for all he had done in preserving us and in healing our feet. What I find people tend to focus on a lot is that she had been asked by Emma Smith if she would like to be adopted as a child to Emma and Joseph. And Jane, in later years, writing her life history, said, I was so green, I did not comprehend. So she turns it down.
I just wanted to ask you about that. It's always fun to play what if. Do you think if Jane had accepted that offer by Emma back in, 1840s, whatever it was, that may have impacted the temple ban on blacks?
I personally don't, because the leadership, once we get to Brigham Young, things change. And even though Elijah Abel had been washed and anointed in the Kirtland Temple, he wasn't in Nauvoo when the endowment was given. That's what would have changed history. If Elijah Abel had been in Nauvoo, he was a great friend of Joseph Smith's, if he had been in Nauvoo and had been endowed, I think that that would have had an impact, that the restriction would not have been put into place. Jane presented the fact that, she talked about various avenues towards getting what she wanted, but that idea, that cultural idea of the curse of Cain was so strong, and the leadership had changed, that it just didn't happen. That's the story that is generally known. The painful part comes later. In I Am Jane, the first part is just full of, the play I wrote, the first part is just full of music and joy and lovely things. And then there's a turn. Joseph Smith is killed. The saints go to Salt Lake, but only Jane goes with her husband, who she has married in Nauvoo, Isaac James. But then we get to the fact that we have the priesthood restriction. And because of the wonderful research of people like Henry Wolfinger, we have access to her letters to church leaders asking for temple blessings. We know that Elijah Abel held the priesthood, was ordained from the sort of from what we've seen in various accounts by Joseph Smith himself. So during Joseph Smith's time, there was not a priesthood restriction. And that, if you want to know more about that, just read the essay. I wanted to talk about the significance of Elijah Abel in Jane's life.
Okay.
He died on September 25th, 1884. That very day, that's Christmas Day, 1884, that day, Jane apparently went to the home of President John Taylor. And she had wanted to have a conversation with him. That didn't happen, which we know, because on December 27th, she, probably working with somebody who transcribes, Jane could read, but she couldn't write, wrote a letter to President John Taylor that says, Dear brother, I called on your house last Thursday, which was the date of Elijah Abel's death, to have conversation with you concerning my future salvation. I realize my race and color and cannot expect my endowment as others who are white. Still, inasmuch as this is the fullness of time, and through Abraham all mankind may be blessed, is there no blessing for me? Eventually, you know, this 1884 is a tumultuous year in what everything that's happening in Mormon history. Eventually, she is given a recommend to do baptisms for the dead and does many. I think mostly in Manti and Logan. Salt Lake Temple won't be dedicated until 1893. Now, when she's seeking to go to the temple, she says, they asked me to be adopted. Well, unfortunately, there is a ceremony in which Bathsheba Smith represents Jane as proxy, and Jane is sealed to Joseph and Emma as an eternal servant. The thing about Jane is it's pretty clear to me that she didn't buy that. She knew that that was not right. And if you listen to the words of that letter, this is the fullness of time. In Abraham, all mankind may be blessed. She's giving the reason that we now understand is exactly right. No, that it was when it talked about no divisions in the house, that the gospel is to go to all nations. That's what it means. There is never a good reason to restrict via one avenue or another one population. So Jane goes to pays visits to Wilfred Woodruff frequently, And he says, well, Jane comes again. She asked me for her endowment. Once again, I had to tell her that because of Cain, so again, that idea that now the church has repudiated, that she couldn't receive her endowment. For me, that's a part of the story, but I don't like the fact that in some tellings, it's the core of the story, because it certainly is not. Jane wrote her story that she wanted to be read at her funeral, and she closed it with her testimony, which is, my testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ is as strong today, nay, it is if possible stronger than the day I was first baptized. I pay my tithes and offerings. I keep the word of wisdom. I go to bed early and I arise early. I try in my feeble way to be an example for all. That to me, Jane's faith, and the fact that when you go through her story, she doesn't mention the proxy stealing. That's just it's just a really bad thing that happened. Bad things happen in families, in churches, but it does not define her. It didn't define her at all in her day. I'm sure she was told, and she probably shrugged her shoulders and said, well, I think God wants more for me. So then we have Jane bearing her testimony, and every time she talks about a trial, she follows it up with the way God has blessed them, with the feet. We praise God for healing our feet, talking about how her children were so hungry and she had no food for them. And she says, but in all, the Lord gave us grace to stand it all. I want Jane's story to be certainly an example of how far we still need to come. If there are people who regard blacks as less than, their hearts must change. But Jane is an example of one who persevered through trials that we can hardly imagine and did it through her relationship with God.
Well, I've only asked you about one-fourth of what I wanted to ask, and I know you've got to run, and I want to keep these kind of short anyway. Let me just ask, I'll just finish with one last question. Do you kind of feel like you're kind of Jane's biographer and protector?
That would be deeply problematic for there's a big concern with appropriation these days, where if a white woman says, I am in charge of Jane and the way her story will be told, it is deeply problematic. I am certainly among those who loves Jane, and I have received miraculous avenues in getting to know her better. I'm so grateful that I have been able to pay tribute to her. Darius and I helped get a couple of monuments. We marked all of the graves of her children she lost most of her children. Only two of them survived her. So we marked their graves. We've been able to do a few really nice things to let people know who Jane was and know her remarkable history. And I can't claim to any particular authority over Jane, because she is herself, and the research on her is available to anyone who wants to do it.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate this. I know that I will love to call you again and meet some more and talk more about Jane and other people in church history. So I hope you'll be able to meet with us again.
You bet. Love to do it.
I'd like to thank Margaret Young for discussing Jane Manning James' remarkable life with me, but that's not the entire conversation we had. In our next podcast, we'll discuss how race can be a touchy subject. Margaret described her experience in trying to put together a televised production about Jane's life that was later pulled.
The truth of that one was that you're going to have to decide whether you want to use this part, okay?
We hope you'll come back for part two of our discussion of race in a modern context, and I'd invite you to support our work. This podcast is just part of what we're trying to put together here at Gospel Tangents. We'd like to put together some high-quality documentaries about Mormon history and need your support. You can support us in a few different ways. Number one, become a monthly subscriber at our website, gospeltangents.com. Donate any amount you feel comfortable. Two, you're welcome to purchase a transcript of this podcast at either Amazon.com or our website, GospelTangents.com, for about $3. Number three, if you're an artist or a musician, we're looking for artwork and music to describe the stories you're hearing on this podcast for future documentaries. Please reach out to us at GospelTangents@gmail.com. Number four, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or other podcast application you use. Give us a review so others can find us. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll continue to support our work here at Gospel Tangents.